I'm WGVU News and Public Affairs Director Patrick Center, and welcome to this U.S. Senate debate. This is one of two debates the major party candidates have agreed to conduct, and we thank them for allowing us to host this one-hour debate. Now for the rules the campaigns have accepted. Earlier, a coin toss determined the order of questions and answers. Each candidate is provided 2 minutes for delivering their opening statement. Candidates are permitted a maximum 2 minutes for answering each question and 2 minutes for their closing statement. The candidates have agreed to an unlimited number of 30-second rebuttals. When a rebuttal is used, 30 seconds is deducted from their answer to the next question. If two rebuttals are used in response to an answer, 1 minute will be deducted from the next topic answer, and so on. Joining us in studio asking the questions is our panel of political reporters. Emily Lawler is MLive.com's Lansing-based political reporter. Often, you'll see her on the panel of WKAR's Off the Record. Emily, thank you for joining us today. Rick Albin is chief political reporter at Grand Rapids NBC affiliate Wood TV 8. He's also host of the Sunday morning political news program, To the Point. Rick, we appreciate you taking the time. As the debate moves along, I'll also provide a question or two generated by Grand Valley State University Student Senate. All right, let's talk about the questions. The campaigns requested we provide a broad range of topics and issues in advance for their preparation. However, none of the questions from either the panel or the Student Senate have been revealed to the candidates. With our paperwork in order, let's introduce the candidates. Born in Gladwin and raised in Clare, U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow is currently serving her third term in the U.S. Senate and is ranking member of the Agriculture Committee and is a senior member of the Finance Committee, Energy Committee, and Budget Committee. Senator Stabenow tells us she is focused on standing up for Michigan families, helping Michigan businesses create jobs here at home, and protecting our Great Lakes and outdoor heritage. Republican John James resides in Farmington Hills. He's president of his family-owned business, James Group International. James, a West Point grad, served as a Ranger-qualified Apache attack helicopter pilot with distinction during Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, and pro-business. John's wife, Elizabeth, is from Ada, and together they have two young boys with another one on the way. Thank you both for joining us today. Leading off with opening statements is U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you to Grand Valley and WGVU for hosting this for us. I'm so honored to be your United States Senator. I've lived in Michigan my whole life. I'm very lucky my whole family is here, including my 92-year-old mom. And every day I go into Washington at the beginning of the week, suit up for Michigan, go in and fight for you, and then come home on the weekend. You know, I know that these are incredibly divisive times, but I also know that you want me to keep my head down and get things done for you. And that's what I do, and that's the trademark I have of working across the aisle. 133 different pieces of legislation of mine are now law in the Senate, 50 public acts in state government. But you know, it's not about the numbers, it's about you and your family. This week, I was so honored to be at the White House where the president signed a bipartisan bill of mine that makes sure that the pharmacist can tell you the lowest price at the counter. I've passed not one, but two bipartisan farm bills that have Michigan on every page, led the bipartisan effort on the Great Lakes, a historic 10-year extension of community health, children's health insurance has been passed with my leadership, and I'm honored to be the one leading the effort with the Republican colleague on mental health and addiction. I know you work hard every single day, and that you expect, if you work hard, that you're going to be able to take care of your family and you're going to be able to get ahead. And I know that you want somebody to have your back. I want you to know I do.
All right. Thank you, Senator Stabenow. Mr. James, opening statements.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be your Republican nominee for U.S. Senate from the state of Michigan. It was also an honor to serve in the United States Army. I'm a combat vet, West Point trained, and I have 750 hours flying combat missions. I understand, as the world's becoming a much more dangerous place, how to keep Americans safe, because I've experienced doing it before. I also understand our veterans, the 670,000 of us who currently reside in the state of Michigan, who have been underserved, and we deserve to take better care of our veterans. I'm also a job creator. I understand the importance of manufacturing to our state, and as an automotive supplier, I recognize the importance of manufacturing, but also as a family business owner. I recognize the headwinds that our retailers and our farmers and our factory businesses have all over the state. I'm also looking forward to addressing the root cause of income inequality by addressing opportunity inequality, by looking forward and bringing a fresh perspective, energetic leadership, and a passion for service to the United States Senate. My opponent has been in service for 43 years, and I believe that protecting the American dream is something that I very much have a passion for. And she's a very nice lady, but in time I believe that she's grown ineffective. She's grown hyper-partisan, and she's lost a bit of credibility, specifically around being in the United States Senate for 18 years and getting 5 bills that she sponsored into law. In 43 years, collecting $4 million from taxpayers. Hyper-partisan, she votes with Chuck Schumer 95% of the time, and 93% of the time voted with Hillary Clinton. Bipartisanship is not a buzzword, it's a way of life. I was raised by two Democrats from the South to believe in faith and family, God and country, and service before self. Those aren't values that belong to any party, but to Americans. And I believe that we need to keep our promises, and in 2000, made a promise to take care of education, and our education system is still failing, and I believe that we need to ask our senator today. I fear that she will say anything to get reelected. Why should we believe you now, and what took you so long?
All right, with our closing statements behind us, thank you, Mr. James. Let's begin with the Q&A. We'll start off with Emily Lawler. The issue is the environment, and the question is directed to Senator Stabenow.
Michigan is struggling with contamination from PFAS, a potentially carcinogenic series of chemicals polluting drinking water in Michigan communities from Rockford to Alpena. There's currently no enforceable federal standard for PFAS in drinking water. Should Congress require the Environmental Protection Agency to put one in place?
Emily, thanks for the question. And this is one of many challenges we have around our water right now. I think protecting our precious water is one of our biggest challenges. I've put together a bipartisan strategy to address this. We are, first of all, funding a health study to look at the consequences and what we need to be aware of. And yes, by the way, the answer to your question directly is yes, there should be a standard. I have bipartisan legislation to strengthen what the U.S. Geological Service can do with better techniques to find this stuff, because there's up to 3,000 different kinds of chemicals that fall under this category. We have begun to put dollars in for cleanup. I've been at Wordsmith over in Oscoda and seen what they're struggling with private homeowners and their well water. I've been up at Camp Grayling where there's this issue as well in West Michigan, as well as up in the UP at the former Sawyer Air Force Base, all over Michigan now. I'm very concerned that we have the right kind of strategy, that we find this stuff quickly, that we know what the health ramifications are, that we have funding, state and federal, to clean it up. And then additionally, to get ahead of this, I've introduced legislation to make sure that any of our veterans who were on any of these bases and were exposed during their time of service would automatically know that they would qualify for VA health care. I know what happened when our Vietnam vets came home and had to struggle about Agent Orange. In fact, I helped them be able to move forward and get that recognized before the VA would recognize that treatment. I want to make sure that doesn't happen again for the people that have been exposed to PFAS.
Mr. James?
I absolutely believe that we need to do anything and everything we can to make sure that we protect our precious waters. But we seem to be moving from crisis to crisis in this state and in this country. And this is yet another crisis that's facing us. We have a crisis in Flint with water. We have a crisis with PFAS when it comes to water. I think that we need to start looking ahead and start thinking more about 2116 than 2016. We need the right leadership who understands how to bring people together, because again, Bipartisanship is not a buzzword. We need people who are used to bringing people together to accomplish tough missions in the toughest of circumstances, and I'm looking forward to continuing any and all resources, bringing resources back to help benefit the people in the state of Michigan. As Senator Stabenow mentioned our veterans. I'm a combat aviator. We did all kinds of training around airfields when I was deployed and when we were training back here. My family and friends were directly exposed to PFAS when we were deployed and we were training across the country. I understand the problems that this contaminant, this emerging contaminant, proposes to not just our environment, but to our people. And so I'm intrinsically motivated to do the right thing quickly because this has affected so many of my loved ones and your loved ones as well. I'm looking forward to protecting our Great Lakes, but I fear if we don't get the right leadership to work with everybody and not just toe the party line, then we're going to end up with water that's more toxic in a generation than it is right now. We don't need more lip service. We don't need more talking. We need more action. And I'm going to get to Washington. I'm going to work with anyone from Donald Trump to Bernie Sanders to get things done and bring resources back to the state of Michigan.
Senator Stabenow, you have a rebuttal?
We don't need lip service, that is for sure. Let me just say, I wanted to mention in Flint, I was proud to lead the bipartisan effort to bring in $170 million to help, which no one would have known would have happened because no one knew the state was going to switch the water and not treat it. I also want to say that while I was leading the bipartisan effort to stop the president from cutting all the funding for the Great Lakes, my opponent was there saying he supported the Trump agenda 2,000%.
A rebuttal.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. It took a total of, 5 minutes to get the president's name in there? Let the record show that the senator brought the president's name up first. Look, I will always support what's best for the state of Michigan. And there is no agenda more important to me than preserving the Constitution of the United States. And that includes bringing resources back and even standing up to the president when it is best for the state of Michigan. Flint was used as a prop, and we need to make sure that we bring stuff back. But also, the president, that was a GOP-led coalition, and Candace Miller was integral in that process.
All right. Thank you, Mr. James. Moving on to the next question. Rick, you've been patient over here. The next question, the topic is infrastructure. The question is directed to Mr. James.
Well, thank you both for mentioning Flint, because that's kind of where I want to go next. And not just about Flint, feel free to talk about that, but it's not just about emerging contaminants. It's about an aging infrastructure underground. We're going to talk about the stuff above ground, too, but right now we're talking about underground. In this state alone, maybe a $4 billion price tag that could go to fixing that. What role does the federal government have, not doing it all, but backfilling or helping not just Michigan, but states around this country that have deep problems underground?
Well, the federal government shouldn't be put in the position to be a solution for all of our ills. I believe that we need to take a free market approach with a balance as the government as a partner in addressing these issues. Flint is not a prop, and as we talk about Flint, I've visited recently and see all the great things that are going on, but a lot of the things that are crumbling, it should be no surprise. And my opponent has been a career politician for 43 years in a position to do something to fix these things. The Sioux Lock's 100 years old. Why are we just now getting around to doing something about it? The line five, 65 years old. Why are we just now getting around to doing something about it? The pipes and the sewers and the roads are decades old. Why are we now just getting and making this an issue? We move from crisis to crisis. We need to put planning in effect and start taking a better look at protecting the American dream and looking forward into the future. And I think working with the president and anyone else, the Urban Renewal Commission starting up, making sure that we get those resources, Michigan gets its fair share. And when you're resisting the president and rather than working with everybody, when you put all check and no balance, then that's a sure way to ensure that Michigan doesn't get resources. Those urban renewal resources, $1 trillion over the next 10 years, should come to Michigan. Michigan needs to get its fair share, and we need to work with anyone and anyone to make sure that we repair our crumbling infrastructure and do it now. We have people in Washington who are legislating futures are not going to be a part of, and we need more of a youthful energy in Washington to get results back.
Senator Stabenow?
Well, this is a really important issue for us. And as you know, Rick, for every $1 trillion we put into rebuilding Michigan and America, we create about 15 million good paying jobs. And so there's a whole range of things that need to get done. I could point fingers. It doesn't do anything. I just want to put my head down and continue to working with people to actually get things done. I'm very glad to have seen the SULACs authorized now with the funding, with the Army Corps finally understanding this is a national and economic security threat. This is the top infrastructure challenge for the state, and I've been able to get this passed this last week, and now we're going to move forward and build it with tens of thousands of jobs. We need roads, bridges, water, sewer systems. We know that. We have lead and water not only in Flint, where that was essentially man-made, but in Detroit Public Schools, in areas all over our state that need to be addressed. We also have 21st century internet that needs to be put in all of our communities because that's the new infrastructure. So as part of my farm bill, I've been able to add dollars to fund high-speed internet, and in this budget we added another $600 million. We have about a third of the communities in rural Michigan that don't have any access to high-speed internet, and that affects our hospitals, education, and our businesses. And so we're moving forward on that one, and I think that's an important part of infrastructure as well.
Mr. James, you have a rebuttal?
Again, Senator, the internet's been around for 30 years. What took you so long? We still have over half of our state that doesn't have reliable broadband and still struggles with cell phone service. We need to make sure that we continue forward in the future, yes, but you can't just put forward this legislation in an election year. We need to make sure we send somebody to the Senate who's going to work hard all 6 years.
Rebuttal.
I just have to say one thing, and that is we've had Republicans in the state government now for 8 years, and the 8 years in control in the Congress. And I work with anybody at any time. I'm just glad I could get this done because this was an important bipartisan effort on high-speed internet. We had the internet. We haven't had high-speed internet all that long. But it's important that we stay ahead for the new technologies our families need.
Senator, thank you. As Rick alluded to earlier, we're going to be sticking with infrastructure. That's the remaining issue here. Emily, lead off with the senator, please.
And by above ground infrastructure, yes, we of course mean Michigan roads. Some of Michigan's elected officials have called for increased federal investment in the state's infrastructure. As a Michigan senator, what would you do to bring more road funding home to Michigan?
Well, Emily, this is really a state, federal, local effort. And in fact, the majority of dollars traditionally come from the federal government. That's why I was excited in the beginning when the president talked about focusing on infrastructure first. I think that would have been a great bipartisan way to do something important and to create jobs. That has not happened yet, but I'm still very hopeful. I think it will be something high on the agenda as we go forward to next year. And so the federal government traditionally pays about 80%, with state and local coming to 20%. What I want to make sure is that any plan that's put forward does not put us in a position where we have to have toll roads on the roads going up north to Michigan. A lot of proposals have been put forward that don't make any sense for us in Michigan. I'm going to reject those and support those efforts that will allow us to be able to do what we need to do to cover northern Michigan as well as southern Michigan.
I run a logistics business in Detroit, and I recognize how important our over-the-road infrastructure is. It's also right on the Detroit River, and I understand how important our inland waterways are. We need to make sure that our infrastructure is fit, and we need to make sure for the long term that we have a plan to maintain it so that we're not in the same situation. We also need to make sure that we're preparing Michigan to be the future mobility hub of the world, making sure that we roll back harmful regulations that stifle our automotive industry in their innovation, that we're looking forward into V2X and V2V and V2I technology to include the new roads so that we can look forward to the new technologies to keep us safer in the future. In order to grow our economy, we need to make sure that we're attracting the best talent and bringing the most capital investment, and that will happen when we truly focus on our infrastructure. But again, it is literally the senator's job to get an infrastructure bill to and through the Congress. And why we're still talking about this after her 18 years in the United States Senate is a tragedy. We need to send somebody who's not just going to talk about it or wait for the president to propose something, but do it herself. Do it yourself. and then put forward something that would bring resources back to the state and something we can build a future on.
All right, next topic, healthcare. Rick Alvin.
Mr. James, I'll go to you first. In 2010, with only Democratic votes, Congress, House, and Senate voted in the Affordable Care Act. 2017, with only Republican votes, the House and Congress again tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They were unsuccessful. What is the state of health care in this country as it pertains to the government's involvement, the ACA? And in your view, is the ACA working properly? Should it be repealed? Or should we try something that is more in line with the single payer system?
Well, I think that this is an example where both parties have failed the American people. How do you pass, how do you go through and say that you can keep your health care if you like it, you can keep your doctor if you like it, and then it turns out to be a lie? How can you say we have to pass something in order to see what's in it? And then, for the Republican Party, how do you campaign on repealing and replacing ACA and then have no plan when you get there? The fact of the matter is, we need to have a market-based, patient-centered approach that must take care of pre-existing conditions. We need to have something where individuals and doctors have the power, not the federal government and insurance companies. We need to have common sense tort and regulatory reform that will increase transparency and increase competition so that we can lower costs and we can increase quality of care. In 2002, Senator Stabenow was placed in a leadership position to lower pharmaceutical costs, and over her entire career, she's collected almost $400,000 from pill-pushing lobbyists, and she's turned her back. She's turned away from the increasing price of pharmaceutical costs. But in this election year, she gets a bill passed to increase the ability for people to ask about their prescriptions when they go to the pharmacist. I would say again, Senator, what took you so long? You had 16 years. And so we need to also make sure that that we are looking to make sure that everybody who's most vulnerable is protected. And I will do that when I'm on the floor of the U.S. Senate.
Senator Stabenow?
Thank you very much. This is an area where there's a very big difference between my opponent and myself. I believe it's important that we have affordable health care for everyone, that it is something we should consider to be a right in our country, and that we need to have a system to make sure that's affordable. And in fact, the ACA is a market-based, patient-centered healthcare system that my opponent stood with the president and others over and over again. He spoke out saying that it should be repealed and that we should gut our current healthcare system that covers people with pre-existing conditions. The reality is, right now, what's being done, both the proposals supported by my opponent, what the White House is doing with new rules, is putting healthcare back in the hands of insurance companies, where they're going to be able to decide if you have a pre-existing condition, which is half the families in Michigan, are you going to be able to get covered, and are you going to have to pay more? And the chance that that is true is very, very high. And then they're going to be able to say, we're going to put caps on the amount of services that you have. We're going to be able to go back and drop you again when you get sick. All of these protections, and by the way, if you're a woman, we probably won't cover maternity care, and we'll probably raise your rates because we view you as a pre-existing condition. I reject that. From my perspective, we need to keep Medicare and Medicaid strong. My opponent also, in siding with the other side, would say 680,000 people who work minimum wage should lose their health care, and 3 out of 5 seniors in Michigan who get their Medicaid coverage as their for their nursing home would lose it. So from my perspective, yes, we need to tackle the costs of prescription drugs. What everyone involved in health care will tell you, that's what we need to do. Medicare needs to negotiate the best price. We need to be able to bring back our lower cost, safe prescription drugs from Canada back to Michigan, and we need to focus on lowering the costs without taking your health care away.
Mr. James, rebuttal.
Thank you so much. First of all, Senator, ma'am, I never said what you just put into my mouth. And also, please highlight that the senator is talking about sides. We are all American. I didn't fight for Democrats or Republicans when I was in Iraq. I fought for Americans. And I'm going to continue to fight for Americans and Michiganders when I get to Washington. My opponent advocates for a full government takeover of your health care. That would result in throwing our seniors to the back of the bus and saddling the future generation with $32 trillion over the next 10 years. We cannot let that happen.
Rebuttal.
Well, that's ridiculous what he just said. Let me just say that for the record that throughout the last year and a half, my opponent has said over and over again he stands with President Trump's agenda, has defended during the whole debate on health care, repealing health care and all of the other pieces that have happened. And he's also said, by the way, that Social Security and Medicare, which are mandatory spending, should not have mandatory spending. Everything should go through the yearly political budget. I don't think Social Security and Medicare that you've paid into should be affected by the whims of politics. We just have different ideas.
I believe
what I said around mandatory spending, ma'am, is that you should have to do your job and account to the people every single year and not hide behind mandatory spending. In order to make sure that we don't bankrupt our futures, 60% of our spending as a function of GDP can't be something that we stroke a pen. We need to do the hard jobs, come together, and really take a hard look at how we're moving forward with our spending, because it is out of control. $21 trillion that you're leaving my generation with, and it's not fair.
30 seconds, and then we're going to move on to the next question.
What he just said is that every year your Medicare benefits, Social Security, and VA benefits as well would have to go through the whims of the annual budget. You have paid into Social Security and Medicare. Our veterans deserve the benefits they have earned. They should be guaranteed and should be there, and that idea doesn't work.
I'm not sure if we'll have any time for the next answer to the next question, but here we go. It's directed to you, Senator Stabenow. This question comes from Grand Valley Student Senate, and it has to do with the economy and student loan debt. This year, Forbes magazine describes that debt as $1.5 trillion, a $1.5 trillion crisis, stating, quote, student loan debt is now the second highest consumer debt category behind only mortgage debt and higher than both credit cards and auto loans. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has said, quote, it could hold back economic growth, end quote. And former Indiana Governor Republican Mitch Daniels describes the social impacts on young adults as postponing marriage, childbearing, and home purchases. What can policymakers do to address this growing bubble?
I think this is one of the top issues that we need to be addressing for the future. I've been on the front end of sponsoring legislation to bring down student loan debt, to take away penalties and fees, to expand Pell Grants, which we have been able to do. And in my opinion, no student who's doing the right thing and working hard should ever have to walk out of college with debt. I think that's incredibly important. And just to emphasize that, when I meet with Michigan Realtors every year, they're now talking to me about student loan debt. Why? Because young people come out of college and want to buy a house and they can't because it's impossible to get a loan for a mortgage because of their debt. So my commitment is to keep focusing on the pieces that the federal government can do and advocate for the state to stop cutting the dollars to community colleges and universities, which go directly to tuition increases.
Mr. James?
So again, Senator, that sounds great, but why should we believe you this time? This might be just like the time in 2006 when you were standing right on this stage when you said that our service members would get every single thing that they needed and you would vote to send every single thing that we needed in Iraq. But when it came down to it in November of 2007, you voted against emergency funding for troops in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. I know because I was there. This is another promise that you're making that you will break once you get to Washington, and it's been proven by your record of ineffectiveness. We need to create incentives. I truly believe for our students to enter fields that has a more quick payback, areas that we have labor crises in currently, areas where our economy is growing, and areas of matters of national security and defense. And we also need to destigmatize vocational skills and skilled labor for people who are going through school, so they don't necessarily have to feel the pressure to go to college, but they graduate high school career ready and college ready. This is something that's massively affecting our generation, and I believe that people who are leaving college should also have some incentive to continue investing. Maybe we consider some sort of millennial incentive, where if you've gone through and you have debt, in order to to make sure that, I mean, we're bailing out things left and right and giving free money left and right. Why don't we take care of our students? Why don't we bail out our students? Why don't we incentivize them to invest in their futures and lower their tax burden?
All right. The next question is directed to you, Mr. James, from Emily. The issue is immigration and homeland security.
A key issue from President Donald Trump is building a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. A report from the Department of Homeland Security pegged the cost at least $21 billion, with more to maintain. Do you support building the wall, and is there a ceiling on what you're willing to spend to do it?
Build a wall on the southern border to keep all the Buckeyes out. But in seriousness, our national security and our border security is very serious. I'm the only one on this stage who's ever had to secure a border. And so I recognize that we have to use any and all resources that we can to keep our nation and our country safe. I personally believe that the best security we could have is our great and strong relationships with our neighbors and our allies. I believe that there are some areas where a wall, a fence, or drones patrolling may be the best solution. But I would leave that to the boots on the ground. I would leave that to the Homeland Security and the Customs and Border Patrol, also recognizing that we have a border right here, an international border right here in Michigan. And we need to make sure that that our border security personnel have the resources they need. But Senator Stabenow, as long as she is associating me with everything Republican and everything President Trump, Senator Stabenow's party wanted to abolish ICE. And so I don't attribute that to you, Senator. I would appreciate you not attributing things that I didn't say to me. I think that's fair. We must take care of our borders. I believe that standing on what we need to do, I've dedicated my life in the defense of this country, and that won't stop when I get to Washington. The Senator Stabenow voted against Kate's law. She supports sanctuary cities. And these are things that are very problematic. Immigration reform is an economic and moral imperative, and we must make sure that we have legal immigration. But illegal immigration, I believe, is an affront to people who have immigrated here properly and correctly, but also to the taxpayers. We need to do the right thing the right way, secure our borders, but we must have legal immigration.
Thank you, Mr. James. Senator Stabenow.
Well, thank you so much. Of course, we have to have Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and I support that. And I've been very involved with colleagues on both sides of the aisle to provide additional resources for our homeland security efforts, border security efforts, based on what I've heard from our border security personnel. I've met with them, and both at the northern border where we are and gone to the southern border. And it's very clear from what they tell me that they are interested in more staffing, which I strongly support, and more technology. That's what we need to be doing, to provide them the technology, the resources, to be able to have what they need along with the staff that they need. Any comprehensive immigration reform bill, like the one I supported in 2013, the last major serious bipartisan effort that happened, includes strong enforcement for our border. And by the way, I have voted against sanctuary cities, which I don't believe work, and support Kate's law. So when we look at what we need to do for our borders, I start with talking to the people that are there every day. And it's not only securing borders from people, but it's counterfeit parts. The customs operations are very important. I led the effort that has resulted now in an international trade enforcement center that's being used by the federal government, so that we are focused not only on what's happening in terms of keeping us safe from the standpoint of people, but also our businesses and our workers from competing with unfair or counterfeit products that are coming across the border. And also, I think it's interesting that in Michigan, Canada's building a bridge for us, and they're paying for it.
Thank you, Senator. Next question, Rick Albin. We're going to stick with immigration. This is for Senator Stabenow.
And I'm going to call a bit of an audible, Patrick.
Oh, go ahead.
Because these candidates have already dealt with some of what I was going to talk about. So let me expand the question about comprehensive immigration reform as it pertains to people who are already in this country and they are not documented, and for people who come across our border and are bringing young children that with them, as we saw not long ago, and the folks who are enforcing those borders are faced with either turning them back or taking them and separating families because the rule, if I understand it, is you can't have young children with these larger groups. What is the mechanism, if we could ever get to comprehensive immigration reform, for dealing with those people that are going to still be caught in the lurch?
Well, this is a really important part of comprehensive immigration reform, and at a number of different levels, we have to make sure that it works. We have to make sure that people aren't being used as political pawns in this process, and instead, what we do is first secure the border to keep us safe, make sure that from an economic standpoint, our farmers and businesses know that the people that are coming across have legal papers, that they're legal, that they're able to hire the people that they need, and that our workers in Michigan know that people illegally here are not being hired and undercutting their jobs either. And it's also very important that America keeps its promise to a group of young people that came here with their parents, some of them as infants. They've been here their whole life. They don't know another language. They don't even know the other country. And they find themselves in a situation now, after going to school, being promised that if they continued to work hard and followed the rules, served in the military, went to college, that they would be able to stay here in the only country they have ever known and earned citizenship. That needs to be an important part of this as well. We also have to address what happens when someone is fleeing gangs and violence in other countries and is asking to come here as refugees, that we have a process that is appropriate and compassionate for them and their children, and that it's done in the right way. I know we can do that. 2013, we passed a bill in the United States Senate with a huge bipartisan effort, and it's so unfortunate the House never took it up, because after that, this just became a political football. It's become very toxic, and we need to do everything we can to get past the politics and back to what we need to do for our country, for security, for our values, and for our people.
Mr. James.
Sure, thank you. Senator, it is literally your job to legislate a solution for this problem. I served with Dreamers. I work with Dreamers and recognize that we're putting our Dreamers in a terrible position when they've been brought here under no fault of their own. We must keep families together. It's an economic and moral imperative for this country to have legal immigration. Whether it's the labor crisis we need to address, whether it's making sure that we continue growing our economy so we can continue to keep Medicare and Social Security funded, we need to make sure that we address labor crisis and make sure to get people to work. We didn't say that give us your doctors and your lawyers and your coders yearning to breathe free. Work ethic is a skill set. And Senator, again, it is literally your job over the past 18 years that you've been in the Senate and the 20 years that you have been in Washington to have gotten this through. There are people who are relying on you, and it's time to get somebody to Washington who will work with anyone to get this done. This is not a political issue. I believe that this is a leadership issue. If we want someone who will finally get this done, if you are tired of waiting for comprehensive immigration reform, start sending people to Washington who aren't going to talk about partisanship, but leadership. We hear a lot about bipartisanship, and we see that we have people pointing the finger in both directions, and nothing's getting done. If you want more of the same, then vote for my opponent. If you would like change, and change now, and not just wait for the next 6 years until we have another political climate, then vote for somebody who has a proven leadership experience in the toughest of situations to do what's right for this country and get comprehensive immigration reform done.
Mr. James, we're going to stay with you for the next question. The issue is foreign policy. This question is generated again by our friends at Grand Valley's Student Senate. The question is about U.S. foreign policy and in particular building relations with North Korea. The question: what will you do to ensure that North Korea makes progress in developing into a country that is open to compromise and further development with the United States?
Well, first of all, you have to take us seriously. First of all, we need to be in a situation where we recognize what's going on. I'm a combat veteran, and I have firsthand experience understanding national security from a strategic to a tactical standpoint. I understand what it takes to keep America safe because I've done it before. There's no replacement for experience when it comes to our national security. I understand that we have growing spheres of communist influence emanating from Russia and China. From China, pushing it forward into the South China Sea, weaponizing islands, and holding trade routes hostage will cripple our world's economy, particularly ours. But as it relates to North Korea, we need to make sure that we're working with a China who's going to be able to impose its influence or at least work with the Americans to get North Korea to come back to denuclearize that peninsula so it's never and no longer a threat to the United States and to, the world. We also need to make sure that we don't take our eye off the ball. We need to make sure that we're working with our allies over the world. We're strengthening our relationships. We are trusting our intelligence agencies. I worked with those intelligence agencies, and they kept me safe, and they kept my men safe abroad. We need to make sure that we keep our eye on Russia, that's continuing to push out and imposing and enabling Iran, and that's supporting the Houthis, rebels, the Hezbollah and Hamas, and saying death to Israel and death to the United States. We need to make sure that we not only work with anyone who will have peace on the Korean Peninsula, but would also make sure there's no public space between the United States of America and Israel. My opponent supported the Iran missile deal, which resulted in $150 billion going back to Iran, which Don Kerry actually said probably did make it into the hands of terrorists. We need to make sure that we keep this nation safe, this world safer place, and I have the firsthand relevant experience to lead and do that.
Senator?
Well, thank you very much. Let me first just indicate that when the Iran nuclear agreement came before us, the intelligence community told us that they were within 3 months of being able to have a nuclear weapon. And so the choice was to come up with an agreement that would stop that while we continue to focus on their other terrorist activities. And I've been a proud leader of efforts to strengthen sanctions against Iran and believe that more should be done. But certainly, taking the nuclear threat off the table at that time was in our best interest as Americans as well as the world. When it comes to North Korea, let me just say I'm glad we're talking. It's better than tweeting. And from my perspective, it's good that our president is talking with the North Koreans. We should know that, in fact, there's not much that has changed as a result of that. I'm hopeful that it will. Unfortunately, because we have been not pushing North Korea at this point in any substantive way, we're now seeing China and Russia that are loosening some of their own sanctions and doing more business with North Korea, which really isn't in our long-term interest. South Korea is also doing more with North Korea, also not necessarily in our interest. So I'm glad that the president is talking, but we need to be clear and listening to our military leaders about being tough and not trusting them. This is not a group that we should trust. They are not operating in our best interests, and this is one where we've got to get it right for our own national security.
Thank you, Senator. The next issue is the economy. This is directed to you. Emily, go ahead.
Do you view the steel tariffs as beneficial or harmful specifically to Michigan, home of the automobile?
Well, thanks, Emily. We don't have an economy unless somebody makes something and somebody grows something. And we are the sixth largest exporting state. My motto has always been we want to export our products, not our jobs. And my concern about the tariffs right now is we are already seeing announcements from the automobile industry about potential layoffs, and I'm hearing other concerns. I also know that our farmers are caught in the middle here. When we are going at it with China, a large source of our soybean exports, our soybean farmers get caught in the middle of that. And so I do support tough trade. I always have, as I said, started the International Trade Enforcement Center that we now have. I sit on the Finance Committee overseeing trade efforts, and I am practically on speed dial with the trade ambassador, Bob Lighthizer, where we have been working through a number of different issues. But I wish the approach had been by the White House to focus on updating NAFTA. I'm frankly glad that we were able to work together to be able to help dairy farmers. We haven't seen the language yet, but Doing something on Class 7 milk is a good thing for our dairy farmers. Doing more around content and wages in Mexico is good. But by doing everything, trade, doing the tariffs, taking on 232 sanctions, 301 sanctions, NAFTA, everything at the same time, unfortunately what has happened is tremendous upheaval and instability in our economy. When I talk to our farmers, they want to talk about this every time I meet with them, our auto suppliers, our automakers. So my suggestion, what I've said to the White House, is let's get NAFTA right and then deal with these sanctions and understand that what's happening around these tariffs is hurting us in terms of our jobs.
Mr. James?
Senator, I love the selective support that you're offering our president. But the truth is, our president was able to accomplish more in modernizing NAFTA and normalizing relationships with the EU in 20 months than you were able to do in 20 years in Washington. This is of crucial importance, not only because I'm the only job creator on this stage, but I also work in export consolidation, shipping to 19 different plants in 23 different countries. Excuse me, 23 different countries, 19 different plants in 23 different countries all over the world. There are, as we take a look at the economy, our farmers specifically, our farmers want new markets. They want new markets open to them. They want free but fair trade, reciprocal trade deals where everybody benefits, to make sure that we don't just send jobs up to Mexico and China, but that we're having good paying jobs right here in Michigan. We need to make sure that we're closing loopholes. And the only way that's going to happen in the real world, Senator, is the people who you negotiate with need to take you seriously. And so being able to negotiate from a position of strength as our economy is on the upswing, you're seeing that since the beginning of March, our economy is up, our markets are up, excuse me, almost 7.5%, where China's has taken a tank for about 20% since the beginning of the year. Now, that's not going to be very much consolation for people who are the front lines of a trade war. I personally have been on the front lines of a real war and believe that the more apt term is a trade negotiation. I want to make sure that I use my experience as a business leader to work with the president and anyone else to bring these trade negotiations to a swift end to make sure that it benefits the people of the state of Michigan and not any political party or the other.
A rebuttal from the senator?
Thank you. I just want to stress the fact that the way this has been done has created instability and uncertainty for every part of the Michigan economy. And certainly the EU does not believe we have better relations, nor does Canada, after the White House brought 232 sanctions against them and said they were a national security threat. I know this directly from talking to their leaders. We need to stay focused. I want to make sure we're exporting our products, not our jobs, and we need to be listening to both our farmers and our businesses right now, who are very concerned about the approach and what it may mean to Michigan.
All right, last question of this debate. I turn it over to Rick Albin. If you'd like to pull another audible, it's up to you, sir.
Well, I'm just going to shorten it up a little bit. Mobility, smart cars, connected cars, autonomous cars, future of the automobile industry. Whoever gets there first is probably going to own it. As a United States Senator, would you be willing to work very closely with the automotive industry here in the state, including using federal funds to see that Michigan stays on the cutting edge?
Michigan must stay on the cutting edge. I was on the governor's Future Mobility Council, and I understand exactly what needs to go into this, and it's going to require working very, very closely with the private sector and the public sector in the state of Michigan to make sure that we remain to stay on the cutting edge. We need to make sure that we have infrastructure reform. We need to have insurance reform. We need to make sure that we're operating in a more permissive regulatory environment. My opponent believes very, very strongly that that regulations are the answer. And we need to make sure that we're having modernized, optimized regulations that and we roll back harmful regulations that would get in the way of this. Because when I talk to my customers in the automotive industry, their biggest concern is the miles and miles of red tape. We need to operate in a more permissive environment that inspires job creation, innovation, because in Michigan, guess what? We're not just competing with Mexico and China for jobs. We're competing with Texas and Tennessee. We're competing with Arizona and Georgia. We need to make sure that we have an environment in the state of Michigan that attracts capital investment and that attracts and retains the best talent in the world. We train the best people in the world in the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan Tech, Kettering, and then we ship them off because we haven't gotten comprehensive immigration reform done. And so the senator's probably going to come and tell you what her ideas are, and I'd ask you the same thing. She's been a career politician for 43 years. She's been in Washington for 20. She's been a senator for 18. Why should we believe you now? We need reform, and we need to plot the way forward now.
Thank you, Mr. James. Senator Stabenow.
Well, I think we both agree that the future is in Michigan. I'm very excited about what we are in the middle of doing right now. I do want to say, though, that thank goodness we have an American automobile industry. You know, I led the effort with colleagues, a bipartisan effort to make sure we had an industry in Michigan. And while I was doing that, our now president said they shouldn't be helped. And the vice president, both of whom supporting my opponent, the vice president, a congressman, voted against us. So I'm glad we've got an automobile industry. We are funding the Center for Mobility in Willow Run. We are in the process, Senator Peters and I, of passing bipartisan legislation right now in the Senate to be able to set a federal standard so we can move forward. I'm proud to have been very involved in setting up new research centers that deal with materials in Detroit. Just met with Lyft, one of the exciting places in Corktown last week. There's a lot happening around innovation. We will own this future.
All right, we have to move on to closing statements at this time. Per the agreement between the campaigns, we want to keep on time here. So we lead off with you, Mr. James. You have 2 minutes in your closing statements.
Sure. My father was born in Starkville, Mississippi. He lived directly across the street from Mississippi State University and couldn't go there because he was black. But he refused to accept dependency as his destiny. He refused to be a victim. My father worked through college, he became a Vietnam veteran, and he came to Michigan where the opportunity was. This opportunity has been fleeting. And now we have our talented kids leaving our state. And we have watched our dreams crumble in front of us. We've watched our road crumble. We watched our Great Lakes become poisoned. We have watched our families crumble. There are areas in Detroit, Flint, Pontiac, Saginaw, in many cases that look worse than the combat zone I was flying in. And the senator I will say that, Senator, if you're going to pull out a reference that the president now made back in 2008, you better remember where I was in 2008. I was over fighting in Iraq in combat. And the reason why I came back was to create economic opportunity in this state, not just for my kids, but for future generations. I have experience working with anyone and everyone in the toughest of environments. I have experience moving forward, and I have not been able to be a partisan animal. I was a military officer. I fought for everybody. I worked with everyone, regardless of color, race, creed, or gender. When you look at my record in the past 18 years as a West Point graduate, 750 hours flying combat missions in Iraq, coming back, growing my family business by 233%, creating 100 jobs, and then running for this office because I want to protect the American dream for future generations, you know that you have someone who's going to work with anyone, who will always put his oath to God and country first, and will continue to make sure that we get more and better quality leadership and better quality experience operating in the real world, accomplishing tough missions. That will be me on the floor of the U.S. Senate. So please, consider voting for me. Consider putting person before party. And please, let's fly.
Thank you, Mr. James. 2 minutes to the senator.
Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. I want to thank my opponent for joining us and for his service. I honor his service in our armed forces as I honor all of those who have served us and are currently serving us today. I was honored a couple of years ago to be able to break through the bureaucracy, to be able to allow one of our finest, Jim McLuhan, to be able to receive a long-awaited Medal of Honor from Vietnam. We have many, many heroes in Michigan, and I honor all of them. My dad was in the Navy and always said to me, he was there in World War II, a veteran shouldn't stand at the back of any line, which is why I've led the effort to create 10 new outpatient health clinics all around Michigan so our veterans don't have to drive so far to be able to get basic care. I will just reiterate, these are tough times. You know that. You turn on the TV every single day. And the reality is, this is not the moment for inexperience. This is the moment for folks that have relationships, that have experience and seniority and a proven track record against all the odds that they can get something done. That's what I give to you, is somebody who knows how to get things done for you and your family. From my perspective, you know, we can talk about divisiveness, people can point fingers at each other. It never gets anything done. I put my head down and work for you. I will simply leave you with this. When my opponent was enthusiastically supported by President Trump, he said he would make President Trump proud. I get up every day working to make you proud. He says he's for President Trump's agenda 2,000%. I'm for Michigan 2,000%.
Thank you, candidates, for your time here today. Thank you, panel. And thank you for watching this Decision 2018 Michigan U.S. Senate debate. So long.